They begin to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
We look down the river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton bales and didn't say a thing.
And welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we'll be joined by from the Media Research Center, Dan Gaynor, and State Representative Andrew Sorrell, who's also the chairman of the Alabama delegation at the RNC. So make sure you tune in tomorrow. Probably have a couple of other guests as well. But joining us now, he represents us in Congress in the 1st Congressional District. Congressman Bradley Byrd joins us online. Congressman, how are you this morning?
Jeff, I'm great. I'm sitting here in the middle of sunshine and no wind and wondering, where is the storm?
Yeah, well, it's definitely cleared up some, so, knock on wood there, Congressman. We don't want to, I'm sure we're going to get some something from this storm.
Well, they're notoriously fickle when they get close to shore. And this one may be falling apart a little bit on us, but I'm not complaining. I just got this morning and put on my galoshes, and now I don't think I need them.
No, which is a welcome sign. I drove across the Bayway this morning, and a little windy, but nothing we haven't managed in the past. Speaking of managing things, did you make the trip up to Washington, D.C. this weekend?
I did. Quite a waste of time. Senator McConnell has already said that bill will not be taken up in the Senate. And you watched, I'll quit talking about the Postal Service probably by the end of the day today. It's just, they get on an issue like that, make a big deal out of it, and then it just goes poof. So this is another example of that. The Postal Service has got some real problems, there's no question about it. The business model changed on them. People aren't sending mail, hard mail, as much as they used to, because we use email. And then most people are getting their packages through UPS, FedEx, or Amazon. So the Postal Service needed to change with the changed times. They just haven't. They haven't made the reforms they need to make. And they need to make those reforms. The bill they put up before us in the House on Saturday would have prohibited reforms, and we're simply throwing another $25 billion at an unreformed Postal Service that's hemorrhaging billions of dollars every year. Made absolutely no sense. The Democrats talking for it didn't make any sense. Some of them were just going through the motions. So instead of dealing with real problems, like the fact that the government's going to run out of money September 30th, or deal with another coronavirus bill, we went up there and wasted a Saturday on all that.
Well, I mean, this is the standard operating procedure for the House of Representatives right now and under Pelosi's leadership in an election cycle. It's these messaging bills. But this one seems maybe to have something additional to that, to sow the seeds of doubt about the 2020 election and the legitimacy of it, somehow tied to the Postal Service. This comes out of that with that motivation, perhaps.
Oh, I think that's part of it. I think she, you know, when the president issued his executive orders on coronavirus, kind of showed that he was intent on doing something and made her look like she's the one that's blocking stuff. So I think she wanted to change the message. And there's anything she can do to swat at President Trump, which that's all she does. So it's a pure waste of time. But think of the money that was spent by taxpayers for all those congressmen and their aides and everybody to travel to Washington to be there for a day to vote on a bill that everybody knew was not going to go anywhere. Just a horrible waste of time and money.
And it is kind of a fascinating thing, because typically you see the presidential nominee out way more out in front of the cameras and kind of leading the charge. But your fearless leader in the House of Representatives, she's taken up that role, because you see her on television 2-3 times a day. She's got these messaging bills. She's really put herself out front in this election cycle.
Well, she sees herself as the leader of the Democratic Party right now, not Joe Biden. And she loves the spotlight. She gets lots of love from the national news media. And so she'll continue to do this between now and Election Day. Remember, earlier this year, she stood up there at the podium after the president finished his State of the Union address and physically tore her hard copy of the State of the Union up. That's the Speaker of the House. She's not about trying to help the American people. she's about aggrandizing more power to herself and only herself, and about making sure that she stays in that spotlight. And she's done a pretty good job of that.
The fascinating thing to me is, though, that we had Parker Griffith, former congressman from North Alabama, on Democrat, turned Republican, turned back to Democrat. And he says as long as Nancy Pelosi is the face of the Democratic Party, it's just a layup for Republicans, because you can run against Pelosi a lot better than you can a lot of these Democratic nominees. And that's where he sees that as an impediment to Democrats in these red states.
Oh, I think he's right. She's pretty easy to run against. And she's so out there, as you said. And Joe Biden, you know, his campaign is just keep him undercover. We don't want people to hear him talk too much or see him too much. We just want to say we're not Trump, and you're not happy with Trump, so just vote against Trump and vote for this guy, and, hey, we'll let you know what he's going to be like after he takes the oath of office. So, I mean, I think we can tell right now what a Joe Biden administration is going to look like. It's going to look like whatever Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and AOC and the rest of them tell him he's got to do.
Tell us this, the RNC underway, the Charlotte nominating process portion of it underway. How do you feel about November, just looking into your crystal ball?
Well, I said this before. If you look at these races historically, they tighten up in the fall. It's like you get to September and something happens. It's the dynamic of the race changes. And in this case, I just think that they won't be able to keep Joe Biden under wraps, and more and more people are going to have questions about him. And I think it's incumbent upon us Republicans to make sure we push the narrative out there about who he really is and who's going to really be calling the shots in his administration. I think that's going to help. I also think that this continued violence that we're seeing in a lot of large cities in America, I think that undercuts the Democrats' message. And if we can get some better economic news over the next couple of months, which I think we will, continue to make good progress against this disease, which I think we are, I think those are positive things for the president to run on. I know the national news media want to say it's over, he's way behind, he's not going to win. Well, he's about where he was this time 4 years ago, about exactly where he was 4 years ago. And look what happened 4 years ago. So these people that are writing him off are making a big mistake. Now, he's got a ways to go. He's got to close the gap here. So we can't sit around and just hope that, you know, good things happen. But I think the convention is going to be a turning point, and I think the president's going to continue to use what he can through his office to make the point to the American people that there's a huge difference between the two parties and a huge difference between the two candidates for president.
Joined by Congressman Bradley Byrd here on FM Talk 106.5. Congressman, is there any reason to believe anything's going to happen as far as COVID-19 goes in Congress before the election?
Well, Mark Meadows, who's the president's chief of staff, and was a former member of Congress up until a few months ago, and a friend of a lot of ours, came over Saturday while we were there to try to get something positive done. And he had been told, and this is the truth, that there are about 20-some-odd Democratic House members that want them to restart negotiations. So he went over there to talk to some of them, and while I was there, said, I'm going to go by and see the speaker. And she wouldn't even bother to break her schedule to come out and talk to the president's chief of staff. I think that kind of tells you where we are. So the only way this is going to happen is if she gets a lot of internal pressure from the Democratic House members, and that's beginning to build. And I can see a scenario under which, by the time we get back on September the 14th, they will have built enough pressure on her. So maybe she wants to get something done. It may be the skinny bill we keep hearing people talk about. Maybe it's a skinny bill. I don't know. So let's wait and see. On top of all that, I keep pointing this out to people, we literally, this fiscal year ends September 30th. Boom. That's 5 weeks from now. And we have nothing going to fund the government after September 30th. So my question is, are we just going to run up to the last minute, pass a continuing resolution until after the election, and just basically not do our jobs? And I think the answer is, yeah, we're not going to do our jobs.
I mean, that seems to be the way things go when you have divided government as such as we do, because we saw this a lot during the Obama years, right, where you get right to that last moment, and then by some miracle, there's either a continuing resolution or something, or you come together and you get some kind of spending package, some kind of omnibus done.
Well, we got basically all the spending done, just about all spending done 2 years ago. before the end of September, which I give a lot of credit to Senator Shelby for, by the way. So we're capable of doing it. But I don't think Pelosi wants anything to happen between now and November that might turn out to be a positive for President Trump. So she's going to try to hold everything back, including this coronavirus bill. So I think the continuing resolution has already been written. It's sitting in somebody's desk. It will appear out of nowhere. They'll rush us down to the floor and say, oh, you got to vote for this. And, you know, I'm not voting for it. I just not. I don't like continuing resolutions, period. But this one particularly stinks to me, and I'm just not going to be for it.
What about this? The CARES Act money, Governor Ivey announcing that she's committed the Alabama's share of the funding from CARES Act. But if I'm not mistaken, the statute says it has to be spent by the end of the year. Do you think there's any chance that gets extended, or we see some kind of provision that would extend that beyond December 31st?
Yeah, we might do that. And we might also, if we ever got to a coronavirus package, you know, give them some more flexibility about how they can spend it. I'll talk to Steve Scalise, the whip of the House, Saturday, and he told me that they've got the most recent data, and still over half the money that we allocated in the original CARES Act to state and local governments hasn't been spent, over half of it. You know, Pelosi and them won another $1 trillion. Well, I don't think it's unreasonable for us to say, well, show us how you're spending the money we've already sent you. If you want more flexibility, heck, we'll give it to you. But we're not just going to throw another $1 trillion at you. But yeah, I can see us extending it maybe a little bit. I can see us giving them some more flexibility to spend it and spend it wisely.
Because it seems like by imposing such a deadline, you give this incentive to rush things, or it could lead to some bad choices by these state governments as far as what they spend the money on, or with the rush just to get it out the door.
Yeah, no, I agree with you about that. I've actually been in that place before when I was running the two-year college system. It's better not to tell anybody running a government agency, hey, if you don't spend it by this point, we're going to take it back, because then they rush out at the last minute, and maybe they could make good decisions about how to spend it, maybe they don't. Plus, I really think in this environment, what we were trying to do with the original CARES Act was to make sure we got that money out there quickly, and we pushed them to do what they needed to do with it. And the money we sent to the state and local governments was to reimburse them for their direct expenses in responding to the disease. Well, we sent them way more money than they needed for that, because we didn't know what they needed. And so I think it's time for us to give them some more flexibility, give them some more time. And I think it will be spent in most places pretty wisely. But if we throw another $1 trillion at them, I know what they're going to do. It's going to prop up de Blasio, New York City. It's going to prop up states like Illinois that have these huge unfunded pension liabilities. And I'm just not for that. I really am not for that.
Because that seems to be the playbook, that these states, they get underwater with their pensions and their obligations, and then you hope for some kind of national crisis. Obviously, in 2009, it was the economic downturn, the Great Recession, or whatever they call it. You got this stimulus bill that was supposed to be used on shovel-ready jobs, but it looked like a bailout for pensions. And here we are, 2020, 12 years later, and we're using these crises to do this all over again.
Yeah, I mean, Rahm Emanuel said it during that downturn in 2009, never let a good crisis go wasted, and they used it to do a bunch of stuff they wanted to do to stimulate government. Look, you know, the state of Alabama is going to finish this fiscal year having not had to go into any of their proration accounts. They actually will have enough money to fund 100% of what they planned on when they passed the budget for this year in the spring, late spring of last year. And they actually have been able to increase the budget a little bit for the fiscal year that starts October 1, and they think that they'll be able to be okay with that. That's called good financial planning. States like Illinois don't do that. They're just reckless, and they expect the federal government to bail them out. I read this incredible article last week by a young guy from New York who said, it's great that all the rich people are living in New York. That way the property values will come down, the rest of us can afford housing. It's bad because we won't have as much tax revenue coming in, but when Joe Biden gets to be president, he'll just send us a bunch of money. And he was serious. That is the mentality of what we're dealing with, and I'm just not going to give him $1 trillion to do that.
Well, tell me this. with that dynamic in play, it has made Alabama, I think, gonna see a bump in population. People are gonna move out of these cities, move out of these metropolitan areas, and out of these blue states, and come to red states. And I think one of those destinations for certain is the great state of Alabama.
Oh well, we're already seeing it. I know of a young couple that has moved to Baldwin County from New York City in just the last few months. And I think people in places like New York City and Chicago, where you not only have had this terrible experience with the disease, but they're seeing all this violence, I think they're just saying, go somewhere where you know, the public officials are sane, where we don't defund the police. And I think Alabama will be a beneficiary from that. I strongly believe it will be a beneficiary from that.
Yeah, and that seems like the trend, and is Alabama... Are they ready for that? And we look like we're positioning ourselves to get ready for something like that in this kind of new normal we're in.
Well, our unemployment rate, even though it went up a little bit last month, is well below the national unemployment rate. Most of our manufacturing concerns are running full tilt. Construction's booming. Real estate prices, for God's sake, the housing prices have gone up. Every contractor I talk to says, if I get more people, I can do a lot more work than I'm doing now because I'm full up with work. I mean, our economy, despite everything, is doing a lot better than the rest of the country. And I think that's an attractive thing for people. I think people are going to look at Alabama and say, they don't have the problems you see in these other areas. They continue to have a strong economy. They have, you know, a good quality of life. Taxes are not high there. Let's move there. And I think that's going to happen across the South. I really do.
Carson, we've got to leave it there. But, I want to thank you for making time for us this morning.
Hey, it's always good to be with you, Jeff.
All right. That was Congressman Bradley Byrd, joined us here on the program. We'll get him on again real soon. Got to take another break, come back, close it all out. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
And you can be proud, yeah, and I'll be proud. You will be, because the South's going to do it again and again.